Okay. Well, we're going to be shifting gears a little bit on the next couple of PLCs because there's a new RFA coming out. And this serves a couple of purposes for those who are 2020, the class of 2020 awardees. There were 26 of them, which is quite a few. And then, of course, in 2021, there were 16 for a total of about 44 active grantees in the last 2 years. But when the RFA comes out, it will only be you can't re-up from the year before. So what I'm trying to say here is there will be 26 people competing for re-up, plus new and alumni and that. So we want to spend plenty of time on that. But on the same token, for those who are sitting well and have plenty of time ahead of them, it's a good time to refresh and also help us be mentors to some of the strategies that work, some that don't. And we've got some people on the call who are brand new, and we've got people who are just thinking of doing this and want to learn more about these environmental workforce development training programs. One thing I'd like to say is if you heard by word of mouth, or if you don't get post-session notes or you didn't get an invite or a call announcing this, just send your contact information to hmtri@eicc.edu. And we'll repeat this through the conversation today, hmtri@eicc.edu. And we'll make sure you get hounded by all of our announcements, Mondays and Wednesdays. And we'll also make sure you get our post-session notes, which will have any websites we talk about or URLs. It'll give you some ideas on funding opportunities that relate to job training, what's in the news, what's happening, that type of thing. And of course, it also gives you a chance to respond to that with some suggestions, ideas, contributions, or remove me from the list, either, however you want to do that. So anyway, hmtri@eicc.edu. We always start out with what's happening in Washington, any of the latest news or anything that we've heard that we want to be aware of. And of course, primary to that will be the suggestion and from EPA that they'll be going out for the FY22 cycle of environmental job training programs. And we're going to be talking about that quite a bit. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Steve. Steve's going to kind of give us a rundown of what he's heard and what's going on. So, Steve.
Okay. Hi, Mike. And hello, everyone. Good to hear everybody's voice. A couple things we've got coming up. You'll be getting emails from us on. We're going to be doing an evaluation of the entire first years, all the program activities. We do evaluations periodically on some things already, as you know, like the all grantee meeting, et cetera. But we want to go back and look at everything that we're doing and do an evaluation. It'll be what they call a Likert scale evaluation, where we'll list statements and then we'll ask you to identify, you know, do you strongly agree with the statement, agree, and so on, to determine your level of satisfaction with the things we do. For example, the PLCs, you know, how useful are they? The mentorship activities we've done, the Connect newsletter, the listservs, the all grantee meeting, and the mid-year webinar that we did, et cetera. All of those things we're coming up with an evaluation here for the end of year one. We're closing in on it, just less than 2 months away before we're through year one. And we want to kind of find out, this is a good time for us to kind of find out how things are going, what's useful and beneficial to you, are there anything, you know, things that we could be doing that you would like us to do, et cetera. So that's an evaluation component. We've actually plugged that into our grant to do every odd-numbered year. In the first year, it's a little heavier because we want to really make sure we're on target and accomplishing the objectives. The second thing is we're also going to be sending out an email or a scan to do an update of the grantee directory. We're tasked with doing this periodically to make sure we have everybody's correct contact information and the correct contact person, because sometimes those things change. We want to make sure that we have accurate information. So those are two things that are coming probably in the next, I would say, 30 days or so. Like I said, we've got about 2 months left in this grant cycle, and so we want to get those emails out to you probably within the next 30 days or sooner. So when you see those, please complete them if you can. And like with some of the information, like the grantee directory, if someone else, you know, if you get an email and someone else in your organization is actually the person that fills it out, feel free to pass that along, because we want to make sure that the right person, you know, we're targeting them going forward. So we would like to ask your help on both of those efforts. Mike?
Okay. And, of course, when we talk about what's going on in Washington, we've been reminding everyone about the December, you know, because of COVID, the December National Brownfields Conference. And, of course, we're going to have a booth. It's going to actually be a grantee booth, and it'll give everyone a home place. We haven't made our reservations yet, but I think probably everyone's just kind of up in the air and a little gun shy, but right now it looks like it's going to go. And we're going to have a booth that everyone can share. We're also going to have a pre-meeting, mini grantee meeting, where we can go face-to-face for the first time in a while. That'll be all occurring, and as we get closer to that time, we'll make more announcements and talk about things we want to talk about, different ideas that people might have for our big summer meeting, which we're planning to be face-to-face in Alexandria, probably the first or second week in August. So you might keep that in mind also. Hopefully we'll be out of all this muck as far as the virus goes, but that's kind of giving you plans. You notice that Heather wasn't on the call this morning because we're in a transition period. Heather got a dream job with the Botanical Garden, Botanical Center in Davenport, and she's going to be an education coordinator there. We're in a transition period. You're kind of stuck with Steve and I and Corey and a whole bunch of other people at Eastern Iowa, but we're going to be getting another. When Glow left, it was Heather became Glow 2, and now we're going to have a Heather 2, and except there might be a gentleman instead of a female, so I don't know how we're going to handle that. But anyway, Heather might be bopping in and out, but she said, this is just a great job for her. So we're going to keep on going. And although this is our first year of our cycles continue for a while. So you're kind of stuck with us for a little while. So we'll be doing this every other Wednesday until everyone gets tired of us. So one of the things I want to do next, we've reminded you about the national meeting, which is going to be really important. We'll all be able to get together. We also want to remind you of some of the other grants that are going on that you should be aware of. For example, the MAC grants. These are multi-purpose assessment cleanup grants. You might say, well, that doesn't have a lot to do with environmental workforce, but it does, because these are the people that have the boots on the ground, and a lot of you are working with these programs. The EPA program, they're $200,000 grants also. And they're doing the assessment, the cleanup, and they're the ones that will either be hiring or their contractors will be hiring our graduates. So it's really important that you touch base with them and find out who they are in your community. There was $66 million went to them, 151 grants. So there's quite a few grants in every state. So every one of you has a MAC or a multipurpose assessment or perhaps a cleanup grant, and you want to touch base with them. EPA also very much encourages, particularly for new and proposing grantees, that you all are in touch with each other. It has a lot to do with where you might be locating your program, your target audience, that you're communicating is important, because it's all coming out of the same office. So we will put all these things in the announcement, and you'll want to touch base, find out who is doing assessment and cleanup in your community. They may come to you, or you may have to go to them. We had a couple of questions this week. One was, when are the links for the all grantee meeting going to be up? And we're working on it. As I said, we're a little bit of a transition. We also, Brian is part of our team, and we've got about 18 breakouts and about 7 or 8 PowerPoints that we've got to load. So there's quite a few hours of material that Brian's got to get through. We're going to get those links up on the toolbox, and we'll let you know when they're up there. Please be patient with us on that. Eventually, our brownfields-toolbox.org is always there. We try to post everything, which will be post-session notes. And, of course, we're catching up on some of these things. We have connected issues, best practices. Most of the material that we do, it's our repository for all things workforce-related. We had another question. This was regarding a new grantee who was getting starting their cycle, and they had some recruitment issues, and they rely heavily on the WIB, and they had a question. They were having a hard time getting information. Now, I might caution everyone, you might put me on hold, or put us on, don't put us on hold, put us on silence, so we don't hear background. We like to keep open mics. One thing about the conference call thing we use very low-tech free conference call, as you might imagine. But okay. Sometimes it has its quirks. We find it's very convenient for people could call from anywhere they want with a simple phone call. But everyone's mic, as far as free conference call, is open. You can put yourself on silence. Please never put us on hold, because some of you have been to some of these have all of a sudden we get interrupted with music, and when that happens, we have to quit the call and everyone call back. But that's just part of the fun of this old tech that we're using. The question I was getting back to was, they were having problems recruiting participants. They were just getting started, and they relied heavily on the WIB, and they wondered about that. We've got the WIB. Maybe the WIB is not truly educated to what we're trying to do and the opportunities we have. But we've been talking to other people about this, and I don't know that any of you have or will have recruitment problems, but we've got an interesting situation that we never had before. Some people say there's unemployment subsidies that are keeping people from looking at other opportunities. Some people say it's COVID, that they're just very concerned about it. Many people say, well, I'm not sure of my career plans, and I don't know which direction I want to go to. Some may feel that there aren't job opportunities. But the issue was they were having problems with not having registrants. We have grantees that are oversubscribed, and some of you are probably oversubscribed, and some of you may have this. But one of the things I heard that was really interesting is they said, we work with the WIBs, but we don't count on the WIBs. And I have worked with the National Association of Workforce Investment Boards, and they admitted to me, we've got WIBs who are stars. They are fantastic. They do everything. And we're going to talk a little bit about that, because one of our new grantees basically is a WIB. Some are fantastic. But they, as the NAWB said, we have our rocks. We have some that are doing the bare minimum, and they're not providing very much assistance to anyone. And if you're the unfortunate one that in your community, the Workforce Investment Board is not active or does not understand our program or have emphasis on some other area, you may not be getting a lot of cooperation from them. So the good advice that I received from a gentleman, grantee, was saying, well, what we're doing is we're using the WIB, but we're doing a lot of external recruitment. And I said, well, what is that? Posters, flyers. Go where your target community goes. Go to, if you're recruiting women, go to laundromats. if men go to laundromats, if you're working in a community where your target is going to be located, go to bus stations, which is perfect because they may need a transportation route. Go to grocery stores. They even use Walmart until they took their posters down, but they'll put them up, and sometimes they leave them up. They put them wherever your target group and where your community is. Go to the community. And they had a waiting list. They said, this works really well. Of course, other grantees are using orientation nights. Janet, who's on the call, has got a radio show. All sorts of that. In fact, Janet, could you tell us for a second what techniques you've been using that are very successful?
Well, thanks, Mike. New Mexico, especially northern New Mexico, is very rural. So we don't have the population density that, so the posters don't really work for us. But I have a radio show, but I also go on to several of the other radio stations and talk to people, especially the Spanish-speaking radio stations. Most of my leads come from mothers with failure to launch kids. So the mothers hear about the program and then, you know, encourage their kidlets to, their folks to apply. We also do a Facebook. We pay for a Facebook campaign, and that works really, really well for us. But a lot of it is word of mouth because we're a rural type area.
And of course, you've got a mature program. It's the first year people, the brand new people, have the hardest job because you don't have a reputation yet. You don't have graduates. We found that graduates are your best recruiters and actually become your best potential employers. But when you're just getting started, nobody knows who you are. So you've got to go to these extra.
Sorry to interrupt, but I was wondering, is this, Janet, is your New Mexico program the one that did that really excellent environmental services career pathway booklet?
No, I think that was HMTRI that did that. Wasn't it Steve Fenton?
I think so. I think that's the one you're referring to, yes.
Yeah, so that's just a really great publication. It's a really good thing for the trainees to have. It's a really good guide for successive generations of staffers to see what we can offer and also how we tell trainees about the opportunities during recruitment.
Do you remember the title of that you're talking about?
Not exactly. I'll have to look for it in my files real quick.
We have several. We have best practices. We've got several careers documents. We also have our sister organization, ATEC, which has a lot about different careers that we work
with. I think he's referring to the environmental technology one that came, you know, where they defined all the different jobs.
Oh, then the training chart.
It's the North New Mexico College and Santa Fe Community College Environmental Job Training Program. It's the whole
thing?
Okay, that's a different document, yeah.
Yeah, you know what? I've been doing this so long, I can't remember everything I've put out.
I think we're all like that.
Sorry.
And actually, you also have one that you provide people at a cost, right, Janet?
No, we're giving all our crap away right now. So.
Okay. Well, if it's okay, I'll put your email contact information in the notes so that anyone wants
that
to contact you directly, they will. But essentially, everyone's got to look at their own innovative way of recruiting students, and they're all over the map. But the radio is a great one. We've had a couple of grantees who had radio shows. In the old days, they used to put ads in papers, which doesn't work anymore. But orientation nights, of course. Now, face-to-face, it's different. Often, once you get the word out, you start having some orientation nights, and you might in urban areas, you might have 200 people. And it's, and we'll be talking about that later, about recruiting and screening, where you've got, you got to get 200 people down to 20. And it depends on the economy, depends on public health issues, but that's, we'll end up back there at some point in time. So, but WIBs are really good to work with. We have, and I'm positive about WIBs in city government. They do have some advantages. We had an inquiry, actually a question from a grantee who said, we're brand new and we're associated with city governments, and could you give us some contacts with some other city governments? And we have actually, out of 44, we have about 7 city governments and then many other WIB-associated ones. And in fact, I'd like to do a shout-out. Each PLC, we shout-out to our grantees from different regions. And this PLC, it was highlighting new grantees from Region 4 and 5. And we've got City of East Point, Georgia, which is a new grantee. And we got another one, which is a new grantee, but also an old grantee, Southwest Economic Solutions out of Detroit. And we're talking about basically a WIB. And I believe you're on the call. Could you tell us a little bit about your program? We used to have a grantee from City of Detroit, and they were inside City Hall. But you are inside City Hall. You've got an awesome website. I went to it, and it's part of Detroit at Work. And could you tell us a little bit about how you're doing this? And you're a brand new WIB, I think, or maybe a continuation of the other one.
So this is Karen Golvin from Southwest, but I'm not sure if Mac is online. Are you on the phone?
Yeah, now? I am. I'm on as well.
Okay. So, yeah, we're excited. This is our first opportunity with a grant, and we are a Michigan Works agency, a one-stop. So we're planning on utilizing that for employment services and also all the other resources that we need. So we're excited about that. So we're going to use them heavily for recruiting, but we also have an Earn and Learn program in existence. So we have a lot of partnerships with a lot of agencies throughout Detroit, as well as our trainers. And so we plan on doing that for recruitment. And so anyway, we're excited about the possibilities and what we can do. And I don't know if you want to add anything to that, Mac.
No, I'm just saying we have a heavily contextualized work readiness program within all of our programs. And we make sure that employers are engaged in what we do to get their feedback. And we are going to bring back our advisory board, where we bring in, it's a, every few months, every quarter, we bring in employers, our partners, our participants into an advisory board and give feedback and best practices, so we can make sure that we are up to date in all the industry changes and things like that.
I remember back in the day, it would be your predecessor program, which was out of the mayor's office, and the project officer would had access to the mayor's office, different meetings, and she was going down the hall and she saw a meeting of contractors, and she asked if she could sit in on that meeting. They said, sure, come on in. And there were all these, the deconstruction's big in Detroit, it's huge.
Yeah.
And all of these deconstruction contractors were griping about, we can't find people, you know, we got so much work.
Yeah.
And we can't, and she says, starts waving her hand, I'm here, you know that's who we're graduating. And
that was our Mary, that was probably Mary Freeman during that time, but
she was great.
So the city of Detroit, they were working on a program that was specific to trying to convene and get the conversation going and working with the city and what we can do to promote it and to build the opportunities out in that zip code. And so we kind of took that and we took it to the next step, like, hey, you know, they've already started this. How can we now implement some programs to support, you know, the neighborhood and the community with jobs that are needed, especially because we have the Gordie Howe Bridge project now?
Well, the advantage of being in City Hall and Paul and up in Rochester is the same way. And different organizations is you've got a built-in leveraged a program where the courses you can't provide, which are, we'll talk about in a second, but non-EPA supported courses, you've got access to all of that, of course, recruitment and placement. And I think the challenge is making sure those departments are aware of your program and put you at the top of their list instead of buried somewhere. But you definitely have some advantages and access that others, nonprofits have access, but they have to work a little harder to get into those contractors that are doing demolition work. Or Paul had the same situation where he said they lined up all their, they actually worked with the Office of Contracting, and he got them together and said, okay, who's going to hire my graduates? And of course, they're all committing right and left because they're all bidding on the same contracts. And of course, he was able to use that access the same way, which others don't necessarily have.
Right. I think
so,
our big concern
welcome,
would
you guys.
Be getting, oh, thank you. I think our big concern is actually getting them into union positions because we've got a lot of unions that have approached us and and are excited, but it's still, I think, very difficult. So I think for us, that's our challenge.
Working with organized labor can be a challenge. It depends on the labor market. I remember back in Cleveland, there was a situation where Bill Bergfeld was in training at that time, and he said, how can I justify this program when I got gentlemen on the bench? I've still got people on the bench looking for jobs. Now, we're not there, though. We're in the opposite of that right now, so it might be a little easier for you. But there are definitely partners in urban areas that you want to get a hold of. We're all over the map on that. One thing I've said in past PLCs, the thing I really like about this program is diverse in every way. We've got all kinds of grantees, and we've got rural grantees who have no union involvement, and we've got grantees who are primarily organized labor. So it's all over, and it just really depends. And that's good. It just depends on your situation and whether it's a pre-apprentice program. Eric's program out in California is heavily dependent on pre-apprenticeship programs and work with them. They give them a lot of support. So it all depends on your particular situation. And one thing about EPA that I also really like is there is no judgment. There is no judgment whether you're organized labor, non-organized labor, urban, or very rural as in Alaska, great program up there. It's all over the map, but as it should be, because this is a diverse program trying to find those deserving people who have kind of been left behind. I've always said this is the best environmental justice program that EPA has, and so we just get there in different ways. Let's talk about FY22 for a second, and a good place to start on that is going to be threshold criteria. Those of you who have not submitted, or those who are FY20, you might brush yourself up on if you recall how that grant is written. And it's another good thing I like about EPA is they don't change it radically from year to year. So I think there might be tweaks to the FY22 request for application, but it will be very similar to FY21. And we can look at that and see what they're asking. But this is a really good time. They only give you 60 days to respond to this. And those of you who have organized these programs know it takes 6 months to really get this thing going. So they've told us it'll be late this summer. They'll be coming out with the RFA, which is July, August, which isn't that far away. And then you have 60 days, which puts you into basically September, October to get your program going, to get your dots and I's on your proposal. Then they're going to scan the threshold criteria in 15 days. And the purpose of that, and I think they may use a contractor even to scan through the half a dozen criteria for threshold to see if they should even go any further on your proposal. And it's a shame to do a lot of work on this if you're not going to be qualified. So this is a good time, this downtime, a good time to start thinking about threshold criteria. and if you're eligible, and what you have to do to get your act together, or perhaps even partner with someone, and you'll be able to see if this is for you, or if you may be better off partnering maybe with the city, partnering with a larger nonprofit, someone who would be the fiscal agent. And let's just spend a little bit of time on that. Of course, they're going to want to see if you're eligible. You've got to be either a government agency or a nonprofit. Now, you can join a government agency or nonprofit and work with them as a contractor if you're not a nonprofit. But you've got to have documentation if you are a nonprofit. And these are kind of the things that you may want to start thinking about and getting together now rather than trying to hunt these things down later. All of your support letters, and we'll be talking about this later, PLCs, but support letters and things, they have to be current to about 6 months. So we're within that six-month period. So you could start all of these things you could start working on now. But you may, if you're just chewing this around now, make sure you've got your nonprofit status documentation so you'll be able to put that in there. And, you know, any one of these threshold criteria could knock you out because of a contractor, and that's, you didn't check the box or you didn't check it right, and it's just a crime. And this has happened where you're knocked out for not what I consider a good reason. The second one is one that we work on a little bit harder. They do state that they will not duplicate other federal environmental job training programs. Now, we encourage that you work with other job training programs, and you just have to work the right way with these other programs. There's DOE programs, there's HUD programs, and, of course, the biggie, NIEHS program, which our grantees, some of our best grantees, are working with NIEHS, either the Career Worker Training Program or the HWWT, that's the Hazardous Waste Training Program. They're working with those programs, and it makes their programs, gives them a critical mass that allows them to do a whole lot more. And EPA understands that, but you have to make sure that you don't duplicate it. So you just have to, and this is the time to think about it, you have to change your target group. You have to offer courses that are different, that supplement that program. They perhaps may be doing health and safety courses, and you're doing environmental courses. There might be a age group difference. Perhaps you're looking at this program you're proposing as ex-offenders. They may be doing something different. You just don't want to have, and you've got to look at both your proposals and what you're saying you're doing. They've got to be different. They might be different certificates that you're offering, different target group, different community. You're going after different things. They're synergistic programs, which is really, really good. They're duplicate programs, which is really, really bad. And this can knock you out. So when you do this, and this is why I'm mentioning it before we start all the other stuff, make sure they can be synergistic, but they can't duplicate. And just keep that in mind all the way through the process. And when it's time to write this program, when we get into the writing of the grant later on, you really want to emphasize not only do you want to state that you've got the funds, because you don't want them to discover that, and you also want to very much in big letters demonstrate how different your program is than what they're doing. And that'll get you clearance on that. So that's a biggie threshold. Yes.
Mike, this is Janet. I'm one of those people you're talking about. And how we did it was, the difference between our program is we're going after underemployed or unemployed people, versus our NIESH grant work is solely for Los Alamos employees.
Perfect. Perfect. See, so that's beautiful the way that's laid out.
Yeah. So... And it gives us access to people in our target area who have children who are in the in the DOE training, who hear about the program and then ask me questions about it because they got a kid that just doesn't know what they want to be when they grow up. So it does have a synergistic effect.
Right. And that's a good thing. And you just don't want someone checking boxes or unchecking boxes and get you caught on something that you didn't state properly or something. And that happens. And of course, one of the thresholds, which is easy, is you have to train HAZWOPER. Now, that was a challenge during the COVID because you have to do face-to-face. That was a challenge in the last year. But moving forward, these won't be granted until the announcements won't be made till next spring. And then with the first cohort in October, unless we have some variant that pops up between now and then. I don't think they're going to do an A and B this time. In the last round, you had to have your plan, your training plan, and then you had to have an alternative training plan because of COVID. I don't know about that. We'll have to wait to see when the RFA comes out. Of course, it can't exceed 200,000. We wish it were. You could put another zero behind that, but that's got some advantages. They've always designed this program that we want you to lever. We want you to interact with other agencies. We want you to use the WIB. We want you to go to other nonprofits. So we don't have, we're not a Department of Labor program. We're an environmental justice program associated with EPA. We want you to be doing EPA stuff. And that is important when we talk about a curriculum. And we're going to be coming back to this when we talk about these ranking criteria later on. You have to put in that threshold a curriculum chart, which in this chart specifies in a very concise and short form what courses you're going to be teaching, what certifications you're going to be offering, how many hours of training, you know, who the here's the kicker, the training provider, the cost. And here's where it's catch 22 if you're a new grantee. Federal procurement regulations state that you have to have three bids. If you're going to bring a contractor in, you've got to have three bids to bring that contractor or consultant, whatever you want to call them, on board. You have to have three bids. Well, then and a lot of grantees say, well, how can I have three bids? I don't have the grant yet. And the way you go around that, you can say to be determined on training provider, but you could also bring them on board before the grant is submitted. In other words, do your three bids now, and you can qualify someone based on three bids with a provision that you get the contract, that you get the money, and that it could be canceled, and that also it would depend on your schedule. So if you're brand new and you don't have onboard training providers and you're in a quandary about that, you can theoretically, per regulations, you can bring a trainer on board and that they've been qualified with three bids and include them in the grant. But this curriculum is something that's a little bit tricky also. You have to make sure, and we'll be doing a whole session on curriculum, but you have to make sure that your curriculum is in sync with the EPA priorities. This is only a $200,000 grant. It does not provide for all of the really important things that people need to get a job. And when we go through, we define eight critical issues that workforce projects confront, and curriculum is only one of eight. The curriculum, it's all the other things. It's the recruitment. It's the screening. It's the retention. It's the life skills. It's the placement. It's the tracking. All of those things. Now, EPA will support tracking. It'll support recruitment and screening and curriculum, but it will not support life skills. So that's where, again, the WIBs have an advantage, or if you're a large organization like Uberall or any of the more social organizations have a real advantage because they're already providing these services in their community. If you're a standalone, you may not have access to that leverage, and so you're going to have to partner up with someone who could provide those. Now, unfortunately, in the last grow round, we had an applicant who was really good, but they were trying to support non-supported training with federal, with EPA funds, and you can't do it. You just can't do it. So that's something that you're going to have to look at. And the reason we're talking about this on this first one is that these are broad questions that you have to make a decision on if you want to partner or if you want to go it alone. If you think I'm overwhelmed with trying to go through SAMS, the epagrants.gov and SAMS and all of that, you may just want to decide to approach someone and add onto their programs. And those are very successful. In other words, you approach them with the idea of starting an environmental workforce program and subbing to you to do all the work, and they would be the fiscal agent. So I'll talk about that in just a second. We'll go quickly here because we try to keep these not too long. Of course, you're going to have to define your target area. And again, we'll talk about this in the future. It's a big jigsaw puzzle. You can't define your target area until you do your labor market and your community assessments, because you want to find out where the jobs are. You want to find out where the neighborhoods are. You want to be in sync with the mayor's office to know where their special programs are. If they're rehabilitating the west side between 21st and 28th, you want your program to be in there to get other federal leverage. You don't want to be on the opposite side of town. You don't want to be in a place where there's no bus routes. So it is a big jigsaw puzzle, and you're going to want to locate really where all the action is and there's leveraging going on in that community. So you're going to have to early on start looking at your labor market assessments and your community assessments to see where you're even welcome. If you're in a community that they don't even want you there, no need in going there. If there's no transportation to that in that community, you've got to think of where are the bus routes? If you can't get your students to come to class, how are you going to retain them if they can't get there? So all of these, if there are no community services being provided, it could be like there's a Lawndale district, and Lawndale district is receiving all sorts of community services. They have a community center. The buses are all going there. That's where you want to think about putting your target population and your training in that community so that your students can get there. It's easy access. Your retention rates are going to stay high where they won't if you're in some hard-to-get area. So, and that fits into, it, as I said, you've got the labor market assessment and you've got the community assessment. That ties into where your target community may be. And then your target community is going to determine your curriculum. It depends on who you're going for. Are you going for a fairly trainable population? Are you going to a population where people have not been in a classroom for 40 years or have been incarcerated for 20 years and have to build up life skills and they need housing and they got PTSD and they need lots of social services? So that will alter your whole program and how you, what kind of mentoring and amount of mentoring you do. So it's like I say, this is one great big jigsaw puzzle, not only for new grantees who are proposing new programs or extensions of their programs or grantees just getting started or even prospective grantees. So all of those things, as I say, go into a big puzzle. And it's a great time to think about them. And, of course, there's the administrative stuff. This is a great time to just check and see how you're going to submit that proposal. I know it's way ahead of time, and you can even do this. Well, you got to be careful if you wait till the RFA comes out. You have to be active in SAMS, which is the system for awards management that the government uses. You have to be registered with grants.gov, and you've got to have an assigned authorized organization representative. They call them an OAR. This is the person that's going to be submitting the grant. They also call this the eBiz point of contact. So all of this is laid out in a training program called Grants 101 that you may want to, and this will all be in our post-session notes, but you may want to just, if you have a little downtime, you may want to go to Grants 101, grants.gov, and just run through it. And once you run through it and you know you have to have your DUNS number, you have to be registered at SAMS, and you may go to your organization and say, oh, we've done that. We had a grant 4 years ago. No, not going to work. They have to be an active current. And you may want to mention to that person. First, you have to find out who it is. If you're going to do it yourself, you're going to have to start from scratch. And that might take a couple months to get that all in line. If you're a new grantee and you're not associated with a WIB who may be submitting grants every year, every 6 months, you even have to change your passport on a regular basis for these. So you just want to double check and say, I know it sounds like you've done this before, you've gotten federal grants. Can we do a dry run and just make sure that for our particular grant, we've got the correct DUNS number if we're not a government agency? We're registered on SAMS. We've got an authorized contact, an EBIS point of contact, an authorized organizational representative. That's the person they'll send it. We had a grantee that said, I submitted, an applicant who said, I've submitted, I keep submitting, and I haven't heard anything. And, of course, 15 days after you submit, you should hear whether you pass threshold. And then, of course, you obviously should hear later. Well, it could be that the OAR, this authorized representative, is either no longer there or they're not passing the information on to the proper people. So you want to get to know who's going to be submitting your grant, how they're going to be submitting it, and are they current with it. You don't want to find out in the last 2 weeks after you've put a couple man months into this that, oh, we don't have a DUNS number, or it's not current, or it's the wrong one. And actually, applications have been rejected because they use the wrong DUNS number, and that's another issue. So you just want to, again, before we get started on and get into the weeds on some of this stuff, we just want to do these general things. And just it's a good time to just double check. And it doesn't matter whether you're a prospective grantee, you're a new grantee, or you're going to be doing a re-up this summer. Doesn't matter. It's good to just double check these things so that you know you're in good shape there. So does anyone have any questions that we talked about? We'll be sending out notes that have all this information in it, and or any questions about anything that we've been doing.
Hi, yeah, I have a question about that the link that you told us to, or the email address that to.
Yes, HMTRI. It's called HMTRI at EICC.edu. And now I'll put some color behind that. HMTRI is an acronym for Hazardous Materials Training and Research Institute, HMTRI. And we started that in about 1987. And we were working with Office of Research and Development, ORD and EPA, and then shifted over to technician training. And we've gotten involved with National Science Foundation and EPA. So we've been doing this for a long time. HMTRI at EICC.edu. EICC stands for Eastern Iowa Community College. It's a community college district of several schools that have worked in technician training and environmental training actually since the 80s. So they've been doing this a long time. And we have lots of links to education and training and health and safety. Janet talked about NIHS. We've linked strong links with them and EPA and National Science Foundation. So,
and I just wanted to introduce myself. I'm Victor Aguilar, so I'm working out of Kansas City, Kansas. And
great.
We are one of the grantees of the EPA grants.
Great. In fact, probably your region will be up. We're going to do 6 and 7 next week. So we'll come on 2 weeks from now. Our next PLC will be in 2 weeks on June 16th. We like to hear from the new grantees and people that are in that region. Kansas City, great place. We had a conference. We had a workshop there. It actually was a brownfield conference. A cab driver said there's more per capita, there's more artists in Kansas City than anywhere in the world. And I said, what? And he said, yeah, because of greeting cards. I don't know. Is that true still?
I don't know about that one, but I can tell you for sure we are number two in fountains behind Rome, Italy. So
really? I didn't know that.
Wow. That is true.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
I don't ever recall seeing a fountain in Kansas. Where are they? You mean scattered throughout downtown?
Shipped out everywhere all over.
Club Plaza.
I guess I wasn't looking for them. Good ribs and
next time you're in town, definitely. They're around. There's plenty all over town. But
there might be an environmental twist to that. Program. Who's monitoring those fountains? Interesting.
Whoever it was that told me, maybe it was a cab driver that told me that.
Very good. Anything else?
So I was, hello?
Yeah,
hello?
Are you?
Yes.
Can someone hear me?
I was wondering.
Okay, we'll go
yeah,
one
so
at
I
a time.
Yeah, so I was wondering if you were familiar with the innovative water infrastructure job training program that the EPA offered this year. It's basically a clone of the environmental workforce job training program, but that one has a budget cap of $500,000. I was just wondering if this signals that someday the environmental job training program may be brought up to a current, more realistic budget size.
It may, and it may even be this cycle. They're very guarded about how many grants and what the level is. And, that's possible. They might just jump it to 500. This is a big EJ program, and that's called the Innovative Water Training Program. Is that?
It's Innovative Water Infrastructure Job Development.
You know,
I looked at that one, Mike, and what they're doing is we're having a trouble getting qualified water and wastewater operators trained and certified around the United States, especially the West.
This goes back to, I used to work for EPA back in the 70s. I was an EPA when it formed. That is how old I am. Anyway, water always had more. I was in air. Water always had more money. And the reason is they wrote this really dynamite treatise on the efficiency of a wastewater training plant is dependent on the skill of the operator. And that has lasted for 50 years. In other words, they were able to prove that an inefficient plant with poorly trained people is way lower capacity than an efficient plant with trained people. And that was a justification for the whole water training program. And water has always been an outlier. In other words, this program comes out of the Office of Solid Waste and Emergency Response. So this is solid waste. They fund some water programs, but it's kind of, and I think this is a segue into what you're talking about. If someone submits a curriculum that has water in it, and it may be taken out this year because they may shift them over to that other program. It is distinctive. The way it's different is that they've got that link between, and we got so many water plants that are run poorly. That they feel they could have tremendous leverage if they could improve the operator training. And there is a shortage of operators. They're all retiring. The downside of that we saw in our program, because we do water in this program, but not to that extent. A lot of water jobs are, I don't want to say semi-patronage. In other words, they're brought into the plant and then they have to have 5 years experience. They got to get their certifications on the job. So it's almost like an apprenticeship. So it'll be interesting to see how that develops. Anyone applying? Are you all applying for that? Anyone? It'll be interesting to follow that program.
Yeah, we tried to, but the biggest hurdle was navigating the relationships with the different unions who control that patronage and apprenticeship process. And then also we have a targeted local hire program, which instead of making it easier, in a strange way, actually made it more difficult to start a program like this.
Hmm. Mm-hmm. I could see a lot of landmines in that program. You know, there's wastewater treatment, and then there's water gardens and water, you know, there's the supply side, and then there's stormwater, and then there's wastewater. So you've got several components, and there is definitely a huge demand for wastewater treatment operators. But I think, like you say, I think it's got some issues there. But we'll track it and see. Right now, there is not a real linkage, and they're in different smokestacks in EPA. We're coming out of all of us stuff we get. It comes out of Office of Solid Waste Emergency Response. So, you know, it's kind of a different. There is an Office of Water, which is not under that same appropriation. So, but we'll have to track that because they're closely related. Someone else have a comment they wanted to make? Well, if you have questions, just respond to the notes that will come out Friday, and we're going to move on and start focusing in on some of these operational issues that have to do with job training programs. Anything else before we leave? Yes.
Mike, this is Janet. I'm in the middle of finishing up my work plan to get to EPA for my first cycle. Okay.
Right. Congratulations on that, by the way.
Well, except for yesterday at 12:15, a woman drove her car through the side of my house. And knocked out the electricity for 65 houses on my block.
Well, that's nice.
Yeah, put a real damper on finishing up, you know. Thank goodness I told them I'd have it to them on Thursday rather than today.
That's a pretty good excuse. You know?
Yeah.
I hope you're safe. Were you weren't in the house?
No, it was at the front of the house. It took out the my wall kind of thing, but it took the transformer next to my house. He went through a fire hydrant and pushed the transformer 2 feet off its base. So she was going pretty fast.
Wow.
Well, you know, we could live with a lot of things, but we can't live without our internet. I mean, it's pretty much, and you need electricity for that. It's pretty tough.
Well, I got to know all my neighbors because everybody came out because they were all in meetings, and, you know, everything goes off all at once, you know. So, but it was entertaining. What can I say?
Yep.
So I just went to a hotel and went to a swimming pool for the evening because there was nothing that could get done. So
you mentioned work plan though. Don't overpromise, and this is your chance to be realistic and, you know, change things. Not in a big way, but you can do some stuff. This is once that work plan is done, now you check the boxes.
Good.
Yeah. Well, I have another meeting that I have to get to, so thanks a whole lot for your time, Mike. Appreciate it.
Thanks, everybody, for attending, and we'll be same time, same place, same everything on June 16th. So we'll see y'all then.
Thanks, Mike.
Good job, Mike. Okay.
Thank you.
Have a good day.